All week, we've had local experts join us to take your calls on the coronavirus, and we continue that today. What do you want to know? Whatever your coronavirus-related question may be, call us. We'll give it our best shot to get it answered for you. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining us today to help try to answer those questions, on the line we have Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center. She's also the Treasurer of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Welcome, Dr. Boucher.
Thanks very much, Tiziana. It's nice to be with you.
Also on the line is Dr. Joshua Barocas, infectious disease physician and assistant professor of medicine at Boston Medical Center and the Boston University School of Medicine. Welcome, Dr. Barocas.
Thanks for having me.
Now, before we take calls, and we already have some in queue, I wanted to ask you, Dr. Boucher, could you briefly walk us through the course of the coronavirus or COVID-19, from infection with the coronavirus through first symptoms through the end state, both time frame and what that looks like?
Sure, I'll give it my best. What we know about the COVID-19 disease is that for many people, about 80% of people, it's a pretty mild disease. So it starts like a cold or a mild case of flu with things like runny nose, sore throat, perhaps a fever, and then a cough. And for many people, it just runs its course in 7 to 10 days, and there's nothing more to it. For a small number of people, maybe 15 to 20%, there is more severe illness with a higher fever, a worse cough, and for a very small number, breathing difficulty and pneumonia and the need to come to the hospital.
And Dr. Boucher, what is that higher fever, and at once, what stage would one know that you're in the more severe? Is there a number of days difference, or does it happen very quickly?
Well, it's a great question. So it can happen very quickly, but it seems in this infection that there is a kind of a what we call a biphasic or two phases to the illness, and there's a second phase in the second week where some people get sicker with higher fevers and worsening cough. At any time, if someone developed a higher fever that persisted and or a worsening cough or difficulty breathing, that would be the time to seek medical attention.
Okay. And Dr. Barocas, before I go to our first call, just a quick question for you. From a public health standpoint, how would you describe where we are here in the Commonwealth at this stage of the coronavirus outbreak?
That's also a great question. So at this stage, and I'm sure that many of the listeners have been looking at lots of data online. At this stage, we know that there is community spread. We know that there is spread among asymptomatic people, but obviously you're more likely to spread the illness if you're out in public coughing into the air with symptoms, et cetera. You know, it's hard to gauge to say what part of the curve we're actually on. We do know that epidemics have, to some degree, without immediate interventions and sort of proactive approaches, we do know that there's a little bit of an exponential growth, so it can go up very, very quickly. And I think we're still trying to figure out where we might be on that curve.
Thanks for that. Let's turn to our callers, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your coronavirus questions to our panel of doctors. We were able to get Beth, who was trying to ask a question in our first segment, back on the line. Beth from Brighton, let's see if we can help you out. Welcome back. What's your question?
Yeah, hi. So my mom is in a care facility, and she's having surgery tomorrow. They've locked down the facility. We're not allowed to visit. And I'm concerned about, you know, what are the are there any suspected or confirmed cases in care facilities in Boston or in Massachusetts? I mean, we're not getting any information about that. And also, I mean, what are the protocols in the hospital? Should I be concerned about her being exposed as part of a surgical procedure?
Thanks for those questions, Beth. And we'll be wishing your mom well with her surgery. Dr. Boucher, maybe I can start with you.
Sure. So, well, let me start with the hospital part first. I can really reassure you that across our state, all of our hospitals are prepared, and we have measures in place to protect patients, especially patients like your mom, are the most vulnerable patients for this particular disease from being infected. So those procedures are in place, and rest assured that we're all, I know from speaking to leaders across the state, that we're all prepared. The care home question is a more difficult question, and I think it is a good thing, despite the hardship on the family, that they've imposed these visiting restrictions because they're trying to keep your mom safe. And I'm personally not aware of any cases in care homes, but as you know, our testing is limited, and so these measures are to prevent infection, especially in folks like your mom.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Dave's on the line from Dedham. Dave, what's your question for our panelists?
Well, it was kind of what you were talking about before, but where are we at in comparison to other countries like, say, Italy, where it kind of just exploded all of a sudden, as far as how far behind on the calendar are we from that happening to us possibly? And the other question I have is, of the people who have gotten the cases here in Massachusetts, I think it's 95, how are they doing?
Great question. So let's, Dr. Barocas, let me start by turning to you.
Yeah. So I'll take those questions sort of backwards as well. With the patients that, because of confidentiality reasons, we don't know necessarily how patients are doing unless something comes out in the media. But where we are in comparison to other states, I think it's important to take a step back and say, you know, each state is, and each city, as Mayor Walsh said, is trying to coordinate across the state and across the federal response. And so right now in Massachusetts, as you said, there have been about 95 presumptive cases, and unfortunately, we don't know exactly how big of an epidemic it is right now due to some of the limitations in testing.
Yes, yeah, so Dr. Barocas, I do want to say, I think Dave was also asking you even a bigger question, which is on the sort of the curve of a spike. Where are we in a curve compared to, say, Iran or Italy, where they've had massive outbreaks?
Yeah, so we do have obviously significantly less confirmed cases right now, but as testing becomes available, those numbers will likely grow. I can't say from the public health perspective exactly where we are on that curve. What we are trying to do, though, is flatten that curve. We want to make sure that our healthcare systems aren't overwhelmed, and that patients and people in the community are taking these very proactive measures, washing your hands, staying home if you're sick, calling your doctor, and very importantly, there's this component of social distancing, which should not be alarming to people, but in fact, I actually take quite a bit of comfort in this idea of social distancing. We're sort of all doing this together, and we're doing this for the public health good so that our healthcare systems aren't overwhelmed, because we have to remember there are people that, aside from the coronavirus, all of the other things that are going on in our daily lives and in the healthcare system with medical illnesses are happening as well.
I want to jump in here, Dr. Barocas, just because we have a whole bunch of callers waiting. I want to get some more in. 1-800-423-8255. We've got Eric on the line from Hudson, Massachusetts. Eric, what's your question?
Hi, thanks. Great points, everybody. My question is about the end of the virus. So let's assume lots of people are going to get it and get through and get to the other end. Number one, is there a chance of reinfecting in the same kind of session? And number two, are we okay to go back to work and we're not going to affect other people after the virus has run its course in a fairly healthy person?
Thanks for those, Eric. Dr. Boucher, can I turn to you on that, please?
Sure. So again, I'll try to take both pieces. I think our understanding of when people recover from the virus is that once you've recovered and you're feeling good and you've been without a fever for 24 hours or more without taking any medicines like Tylenol or Advil, you're okay to return to your life and your work. The bigger question of whether or not it's possible to be reinfected is something that we're still learning about. And so I've seen some data coming out of China and Korea, but I don't think we have a definitive answer yet, at least not one that I'm aware of.
So let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Susan's on the line from Danvers. Susan, what's your question?
Oh, yes. So my question has this information been brought to your attention from the from anyone? The House Oversight Committee this morning, Representative Katie Porter from California, questioned Dr. Redfield, the head of the CDC. after about a five-minute conversation of her saying, we wrote you a letter last week asking you a bunch of questions, and we want to know, will you commit to invoking your authority under 42.CFR 71.30 to agree for testing, quarantine, treatment for anyone that cannot afford it for free? So these would be the people that do not have insurance.
So, Susan, I'm gonna I want to grab the first part of that. Are you asking if that is true and if the doctors have heard about it?
Yeah, I'm asking if you've heard about it. In other words, I watched this morning. I have it on tape. I've watched it like five times. He finally said, yes, I will commit to invoking my authority.
Okay, well, we're going to pick it up from there, Susan, only because we have so many calls that I want to get to in this remaining time. It is something that I've seen extensively on social media. We haven't gone through the process of confirming that yet, but again, I have seen the social media references to it. Drs. Boucher and maybe Dr. Barocas on this one, have you heard anything about this? Do you have any comments?
So I have... Similar to you, I've heard, I saw a very brief clip, but unfortunately we've been taking care of a lot of these issues today, so I haven't actually gotten a chance to dive deep into the media aspect of it
yet. So this is something to watch for.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take another call. We've got Rachel on the line from Brookline, Massachusetts. Rachel, what is your question for the doctors?
Hi, yes. My question is really one of sort of volume and capacity. And, I've been hearing things from Italy, who are sort of ahead of us on this, about triage situations and, you know, people that they just can't take care of anymore. And I'm wondering what our regional and local capacity is and if we think we might ever see a situation like that.
Okay. Dr. Boucher, would you like to take that?
Sure. I'm happy to take it. And I'll start by saying I sincerely hope we don't see that. And the measures that we've been talking about and that Dr. Brookes was talking about, the social distancing measures and the things that we can and are doing now are all designed to prevent us from getting to the situation that our friends in Italy have found themselves in. So we know that our hospitals do have capacity, and we're making decisions, as many of us have announced publicly, to shift some of our activities actually to allow for us to build up that capacity should we need it to take care of what we call as a surge or a group of extra patients that come our way. And we're very fortunate in Massachusetts to have such wonderful hospitals and great resources in terms of doctors, nurses, caregivers, and real experts, as well as the equipment to provide the care should we need to. But I'll come back to where I started and say that the measures that we're taking, these kind of difficult decisions we're making about social distancing and foregoing games and even school in some cases, are all designed to prevent us from having to face the difficulties that our friends in Italy are facing.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are talking with two doctors, Dr. Helen Boucher and Dr. Joshua Barocas, taking your calls on the coronavirus. Heath, you are on the line from Roxbury. What's your question?
Hi, my question's about the flu fatality rate that gets quoted in comparison to COVID-19. And specifically, it's a low number. And what I want to know is, when they talk about that number, does that number include people who are vaccinated and then succumb to the flu? Or is it unvaccinated people exposed to the flu, kind of like COVID-19 is now, and succumb?
Great question, Heath. Dr. Barocas, is that something you can field?
Sure, absolutely. So I think it's important that he bring up this issue that we still do have influenza floating around. It's still influenza season. Of course, these are two very different viruses transmitted in similar ways. With the influenza mortality rates, there are a couple things to consider. One is that we have, because we have sort of widespread testing availabilities thus far with flu, and we've been living under the umbrella of influenza for many, many years, we have good surveillance systems, and we know that denominator, how many people have gotten it and how many people have died. Specifically to his question, death, the number of deaths from flu are among vaccinated and unvaccinated people. And what I would say from the public health perspective is that we know that influenza, even if you get influenza and you've had the vaccination, your chances of severe illness and death from influenza are much lower if you've been vaccinated. And I would encourage everyone on listening that if you haven't gotten your flu shot, to actually still get it, because it can protect you from the flu still.
All right, let's try to grab at least one more call. We've got Alicia on the line from Belmont. Alicia, what's your question?
My question is, if you have the symptoms of a common cold, how do you know that you're in the clear and it's not like a mild case and you could therefore be a carrier in the community?
There you go. Dr. Boucher.
Great question. You know, I think that the honest answer is that we don't definitively know at this time because of our, you know, challenges with testing. That said, we know that if you have the symptoms of a cold and you practice good hand hygiene and you keep social distance, there is very little risk to you or anybody else. So we recommend those measures the same as you would take at this time of year.
So let's talk about social distancing for a minute. I know we had at least one caller who was interested in that, and I'm just going to pick it up right here. Dr. Barocas, specifically, what does social distancing mean? And in a person's everyday life, what does that mean they should and shouldn't do? We've got about a minute and a half left total.
All right, I will distill it down to a minute. So social distancing is essentially exactly what it means, trying to keep one, safe and safe distances physically away from someone, and second, not being in large groups where that's not possible. Third is not necessarily traveling too far outside of your what would be considered your social network right now. This is not meant, and I want to reiterate, this is not meant to instill panic or fear. It is not meant to be stigmatizing and to make people feel other. In fact, I think that this is one of those things where we can say, this is a situation in which we really want you to stay within your little community right now, so that this doesn't spread, and we can do that together.
Great. And Dr. Boucher, in about 20 seconds, I know we had one caller saying, I've got a baby under the age of three. We have people who come in and help. Should we stop having people from the outside come in and help?
Well, I think that is a question that needs to be balanced in every single case. And I think if you have people coming into your home to help with things like care and things that allow people to work and carry on their life, I think you need to do that and have those people come in your home. The measures that we can all take are meticulous hand washing, keeping a social distance, and not working when we're sick. And I think that's one of the hardest messages, but one of the most important messages today for all of us in all of our communities is that anyone who is sick should not be going to work.
All right, that is Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center, also the Treasurer of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Thanks, Dr. Boucher.
Thank you.
And also with us has been Dr. Joshua Barocas, infectious diseases physician and assistant professor of medicine at Boston Medical Center and the Boston University School of Medicine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.